Let me affectionately greet all of you who I assume to be present behind your screens. It is a great opportunity for me to address you. I do remember that I have received invitations to attend your Ratha Yatra Festival or Festival of India since maybe already, I think 15 years or so. And now by the help of this computer technology, it is finally possible to address you for the first time. So I'm really, I celebrate this as a historical event, a fulfillment of my long, long years of preparations. It is really wonderful to be with you. Now, I would like to address the subject matter ahead of us. I will request my assistant to just bring me the first canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 19. The question which we will address today is, how can we be like the lotus flower and remain detached and undisturbed by material nature? How can we remain authentic to our true self in the midst of constant adversity? This is a very good question, and it is a question which every one of us needs to address at one point or another in his life, because disturbances, distractions, even attacks will happen as surely as nights will happen. Just like nights follow the day, in the same way, suffering, misery, distraction follows the good times in Krishna consciousness or in spiritual life. And to not be shaken at that time is definitely something which we will learn to know. There is a very, very, very remarkable example of someone who is not faced or disturbed in the light of external disturbances, whose example we can really emulate, we can follow it. I'm just looking it up for you. I'm talking of Parikshit Maharaj, the king of the world, who received a most disturbing notice while he was in his palace. He had returned from an excursion where he had an unfortunate encounter, but he never imagined that it would turn into this. The messenger who was entering the palace of King Parikshit brought news of his impending death. He said, within 7 days you will be dying because you are cursed by a very, very strong curse. Parikshit Maharaj took note of this, and he acted upon this misery. Just imagine any one of us here that we receive a sudden notice that you have so and so many days to live. What could be a greater disturbance than such a notice? I think we would first react with disbelief. We would deny this, and gradually we would try to come to terms with this news, and then find out what is the best way to react. Before Parikshit Maharaj, before we hear how he reacted, I want to make a little point. It is not that Parikshit did not know what are troubles. Even when he was this small, an embryo, right under the heart of his mother Uttara, he was still in the body of Uttara. There was a vicious attempt on his life. A warrior had released an undefeatable, we would say in modern times, intelligent weapon. It was something like an atom bomb, which would only implode or explode on the victim. It wouldn't destroy anyone in the surrounding areas. So he had been under attack since he was an embryo, and he had been protected all these times. Krishna had personally appeared in the womb and had used his club as a armor. He had whirled it so fast that it stopped to be just a single club. It became a shield, you know, like, I think you can see the idea when you whirl something around. And in this way, Parikshit Maharaj remained unharmed. His mother had prayed for him, and the Lord had appeared in the womb and protected him. But years and years later, where he had fought battles, where he had single-handedly faced the most powerful entity of Kali Maharaj, the king of Kali Yuga, the very vicious influence which we all feel, but he had faced him in his personified form. After a glorious life, he was cursed by a child. It was a powerful curse, and he now needed to react to the curse. It's almost like us. We may have survived a few things, heavy attacks, verbal attacks, maybe health attacks, or whatever. But now, the challenge stands before us, a very, very strong curse pronounced by a brahmana, a young child brahmana. There was a slight possibility for Parikshit Maharaj to try to defend himself before the or from the effects. He could have done a yagya. He could have gone to powerful rishis and asked for his perspective. But his understanding forbade him. He did what I will give to you as a first step, how to deal when misery strikes. He adjusted his vision. He said that I was too attached to my material life, and the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that now I will detach myself from the entanglement in Maya, in illusion. He adjusted his vision. He didn't think any longer, well, this is terrible that this happened, but he could understand this is an opportunity for me to become free from attachments, and in this way become free for my eternal life. You must know, my dear listeners, devotees, and friends, and skeptics, whoever you are in the audience, that to think that in this world you can attain a permanent place of safety is not possible. This world is a world of birth and, sure enough, death for every one of us. It's only a question of time. Where we live, there is a forest, and the forest persons, they paint an X on the trees which they are going to cut. And the X has different colors. When it is a red, it will be cut in the next week. When it is a yellow, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. My dear listeners, just like the trees in the forest are marked before they are cut, each single one of us has an X on the head. It's either a red X, that means within the next week we will die, or a yellow colored X, which means after 2-3 weeks, after some more time, we will be cut by the force of time, who will manifest before us as death. So Parikshit Maharaj understood, it's good that I heard now when is my time, because now I can detach myself from Maya and I can actually prepare myself for the eternal journey. He adjusted his picture. He adjusted his image. This is what you need to do when you deal with your own personal misery or your own crises. And this is how you can remain undisturbed in this world. You can see, by adjusting your concept, you can all of a sudden come to the second level, that is, you can accept the situation. You don't fight any longer against the inevitable and use up all your resources and strengths. But you can accept it and make it into something wonderful. Parikshit Maharaj, he said, he accepted his situation, and then he turned to the devotees who had come to support him and to be around him. He said, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul. He went to the banks of the Ganga and said, when he arrived, Mother Ganga, you are a representative of the Lord. Kindly also accept me, for I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord in my heart. The snake bird or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created bite me at once. He was fine with it. Your strengths, when there is misery, lies in accepting the situation, because then you can act wisely. If you're hectic and panic and confused and bewildered and in 108, well, 120 different places, this will be very bad. You won't have the strength to deal with it maturely. And then finally, his last way of dealing with the situation, he started to aspire for Krishna. This is the last way. He had a hope. He had an intense hope. He said, I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I want to have three things, aspirations. I want to have attachment to Krishna. I want to have association with his devotees, good association. And I want to have friendly relationships to all living beings. No, I want to be a friend and a helper and a support. So this is the formula of the three A's. The formula which will help you to remain undisturbed and detached by whatever material nature offers to you. You first of all need to adjust your expectations. You can't go as you were before. You have to just look at it, analyze it, understand it, and adjust your own vision and conception. The next is you need to come to terms with the situation, that is, accept it as it is. You have to be a realist when it comes to your situation. Don't be an illusion about it, because then you will not, let us say positively, because only a realistic approach can really help you. And finally, you can aspire. For those things which you might have overlooked, those things which might have become a little bit covered while you were trotting along your ordinary life with the successes, with the distractions, and so on, you can take the misery as a wake-up call. Yes, that puts your mind towards the right aspirations. Krishna, I need only you. And I want association with your real devotees in whose heart we find you. And also, I want to be a friend to all living beings. I want to support them. They are like me, struggling souls in this world. If you have forgotten everything, what we have covered up till now, because you were multitasking maybe, make a note about the three things. Adjust your perspective when you are dealing with misery. Learn to accept the situation as it is. And then learn to aspire. Get the right vision. And I request you all, because the disturbances will come for everyone of us, have this little note with you when the next disturbances comes, and then unpack the three items which were brought to your attention. If you wish to know where the verses which we heard, which show Maharaj Parikshit's enlightened reaction to miseries, you can find them in Canto 1, Chapter 19, verses 13 to... yes, 16. There you will find the three, enlightened responses by Maharaj Parikshit. This program is dedicated to a very, very exalted Vaishnava, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj, whose presence in this world is sorely missed by many, by all devotees who knew him, and especially by his friends. I was just thinking, I had heard one devotee, Pran Govinda, he was the priest who came into the room where Maharaj had left the body, the room in the hospital, and who saw him just minutes, really, 3 minutes after his departure. Before he entered the room, he asked the main nurse, "What was your impression of Maharaj?" And she said, very saintly being. And when he came out of the room, he asked the same nurse and other doctors, what was your impression? Anything more? And they told him that they felt that God had sent Maharaj into the hospital, almost like a messiah, to bring some good consciousness and inspiration to the entire staff. So, this priest shared that the same. That the whole world had prayed for his bhakti, for His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj. But Krishna had decided something else, did not return Maharaj to full physical health like we have had prayed. And he made an and he said that must be because Krishna had a certain purpose in mind. It's almost like with Parikshit Maharaj. He was prayed for when he was attacked by this vicious Brahmastra weapon while still being in the womb of his mother, and Krishna heard the prayer. Later, when he received his announcement that in 7 days you will be dead, there must be many citizens in the states, priests, devotees, who had prayed for Parikshit Maharaj's safety. But Krishna had another plan. And yes, after 7 days, he took him away. Why? Why? He must have had a purpose. And in the case of Parikshit Maharaj, that earthly, that great devotee king, it is clear. He wanted that the Bhagavatam would be spoken by Shukadev Goswami to him, the enlightened scripture which can release anyone who comes in contact with him, with the Bhagavatam, from all fear, all lamentation, and all misery. This is, you could say, the literary medicine against shoka. Shoka means misery, moha, which means illusion, and bhaya, fear or anxiety. By regularly reading and understanding and absorbing the content of the Bhagavatam, you can actually find a new reality in your life, a new platform of understanding and living, a new stage of empowered, or state of empowered living, by regularly reading the Bhagavatam, so that you will be very, very easily able to be undisturbed in the face of disturbances, and to be pursue and continue your authentic path without being thwarted. When Maharaj went into the hospital, I talked with some very, very, very close friends with which he had talked before, and they feel he knew that he would leave the hospital only in his spiritual body, but he would leave the material body behind. But he had the safety of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not just some theory that is a burden for the mind to understand. Bhagavatam is the personal presence of the Lord, who comes and sits on the heart of anyone who has a contact with the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said, even those who can't read, but who just touch the Bhagavatam, they will be spiritually electrified. With this, I don't mean that all of us should just get a copy of the Bhagavatam and put it on the bookshelf. When I was in America, I saw the bookshelves, they were full of the big classics, and then I went and wanted to pick a book from the bookshelf, like Faust by Goethe. I have appreciated this work before I came, became a monk very much, and I only had the empty shell, the, what is it called in English, you know, the front and the back matter of the book. There was no book inside because no one was interested to read. They just wanted to have this to be there. That's not how we should deal with the Bhagavatam. Then we just have a cover of the Bhagavatam and we never open the book. And there's we should shutekshita. We should hear, and by hearing, see. Shrutekshika, see through the ears. That's how we should deal with the Bhagavatam. We should either read or hear the Bhagavatam and then see the spiritual content of what is there. That's a good way. So we dedicate this with a heart that is crushed as if a Himalaya mountain fell on it. We dedicate this with a crushed heart to our Maharaj, a rare devotee, extraordinary devotee of Krishna, and a true friend to so many devotees. Once Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he said something to me which I want to share with you. He said, Maharaj, how can you hold your hand for a longer time? If you make like this, a fist, or if you hold it in a relaxed way. I did not know what was in his mind. I said, well, if I hold my hand like this, after some time there will be a spasm and some pain. But if I hold my hand in a more relaxed manner, it will be easier to hold it for a long time. And he said, exactly. That is how you must practice Krishna consciousness. At times it is necessary to make a special effort, but practice it in a natural way. Practice it in a natural manner. Then it is very easy to practice. And I said, what is natural? And he said, you must nourish yourself. A nourished man can walk naturally through life. He has no hunger, no inconvenience. So you must nourish yourself by regularly reading in the Prabhupada's books and by chanting the holy names with great love and affection. I treasure these personal instructions. I want to go on now, move on, and combine this lecture with a third subject matter, Ratha Yatra. By now, you can already, if you have want to pose some questions, put questions in the chat box. And I will request our host, I think it is the highly talented Hari Prasad, to then take those questions and pose them to me, because I'm not so good with the computer and cannot view the chat box so easily. The festival of Ratha Yatra has a very personal dimension which needs to be known and applied by all of us. We would obviously like to dance in the streets of Toronto. I understand there is a tunnel in Toronto, I have heard about this legendary tunnel, which gives a very good echo and very good sound background to kirtans when you sing with so many. It's a beautiful, massive, all-embracing sound. And obviously we would all like to be in this situation, meet and see the wonderful deities of Lord Jagannath, pull the cart. We would love to also see most properly our friends, our learned and inspiring Maharajas, and so on. But we can't do it But there's one thing which you can do. It is has to do with the inner dimension of the festival. Mm. This festival, Prabhupada once said, is a very feeling festival because it celebrates pulling Krishna back into our hearts. You must be knowing that Krishna had left Vrindavan at a rather young age, and this was gave intolerable pain to the residents of Vrindavan. They were not breathing properly. They were found lying in a comatose position in the valleys. There was a channel filled with the tears of Nanda and Yashoda, which came from their home and went right to the Yamuna. When Krishna left Vrindavan, the life left the Vrindavan only completely, almost completely. All the Brijbasis were only living because they were maintained by the hope that one day Krishna would maybe return. Then the news came after 100 years of waiting. This is true faithfulness, to wait for 100 years. That Krishna is nearby, only some 70 kilometers or miles, I do not remember now, from Vrindavan away. He is in Kurukshetra, where there is a huge event. So all the Brijbasis, all the residents of Vrindavan, put their things on ox carts, and a long procession, which included many of the Brijbasis, went from Vrindavan to see Krishna at Kurukshetra. And there they met the Lord. But they met him in a way that was not so pleasing to their hearts. Krishna in Vrindavan had been joyful. He had played his flute. He had herded cows. He had run through the forest without shoes. He had used the forest decorations. And he always smiled and always laughed. There was always a joyful expression around his face. But now he was a big prince. He was dressed in a princely way. The flute was not there. He was surrounded by military. And he was no longer that playful. Surprisingly, surprising young prince who always had the most loving activities and relishable expressions in his face. He was frozen into formality, and the Brijbasis did not relate to that Krishna. And so they said to him, "Please, my dear Krishna, return back to the land of your relishable relationships, to Vrindavan." And Krishna said something, "Yes, very soon I will come." But then, at one stage, all the Brijbasis, when they spoke to Krishna about this, he was on a chariot, they grabbed the chariot and pulled the chariot in the direction of Vrindavan, which was more than a place. It was where their heartfelt bhakti, could be exchanged. The uncomplicated, unformalized, unrestricted love, where that could flow in high waves of a rush of rasa. Yes, like this. So this mood, Krishna, we belong together. Krishna, we have something to do. Krishna, you are my Lord. I'm your servant. Please come. Come back into my heart. I happen to be very forgetful. I'm this king of the distracted Toronto people. I am not in my authentic place. I can be so easily disturbed and pulled away from you, my Lord. But please, I know I will not become happy without your presence within my heart. And this feeling festival, that's Ratha Yatra for us. That you can do when you pick up a book today in the evening, or when you chant your rounds, or when you sing a prayer, and in this way pull Krishna back into your heart. Although you may not be able to dance in the tunnel of Toronto with Lord Jagannath and all the deities, you are still able to pull Krishna in your heart while you stay at home. I would like to end this katha and then see if there are any questions by reading to you the story of Madhava Das. I will not read it, I will tell it to you, who is a devotee, a Brahmana born in the town of Kanja Kupja. When his responsibilities at home to maintain his family were over, he actually understood the Lord is my and my real protector, my only protector, and he will take care of me. So he went to Jagannath Puri and resided close to the temple. Now, because he was a scholar, and a great devotee, he was so absorbed in his Krishna consciousness and love of Godhead that he forgot about eating and drinking. He made no arrangements to beg for food, and therefore he became hungry, but he didn't really notice it. He became weak. But because he was so much in love and so inspired, he also did not really notice that. So, but Lord Jagannath noticed. One day he thought, this is too much. The Lord said, every day I'm getting on a huge golden plate, the most wonderful food preparations, but he is my devotee who only thinks of me, who worships me, who cries for me with tears in his eyes, and he's hungry. I can't tolerate this. So he told Lakshmi, Lakshmi, you need to take my golden plate with all the preparations, and you should bring it to Madhava, who is nearby. So, goddess of fortune took the plate and arrived at Madhava's cottage. Madhava at that time had his back towards the door, you know, like I also have my back towards this door in the background. And therefore, he could not see when Lakshmi entered. But what he saw was that his entire heart was illuminated by the unearthly radiance that was emanating from Lakshmi Devi. Wow! That is what he saw, that glaring effulgence. And he had been meditating about the divine couple in his heart, and all of a sudden the heart became so bright that it went through his eyelids almost, and he turned around and he saw a light at the entrance which then disappeared quickly. And where the light was, had been, was this huge golden plate with the various, very delicious preparations. He was very hungry. He had not eaten. He had not drunken for many days. And he could understand this was a divine personality who has brought me my food. So he took the food from the golden containers, put it on something and ate. Now, that evening, the priests who took care of the altar were very disturbed because the golden plate was missing. It was really precious. It was really precious. So in the morning, they ordered a search action all over Puri. That they thought there must have been a thief who has stolen the golden plate, and it's hopefully still in his house. So the priests also came into the hut of Madhava and found the golden plate. And without any word of interrogation, without any trial, without any question, they jumped on Madhava and gave him a beating so that blood came out of the nose and he came on the ground. Misery. Great physical misery. But even though they used a stick to beat him, there were no beating marks. I said something wrong. There was no blood. There was nothing. No reaction in Madhava. But what the priests who were in the temple found out, that Lord Jagannath took on all the bruises, all the stick beatings, all the whatever they did to Madhava, Jagannath on the altar accepted this. The pujaris were astonished, but the Lord told them, it was I who sent the plate of prasad and to Madhava, and only for that reason did Sri Madhava Das accept it. So they, the priests, by this miracle, became convinced of the greatness of this great devotee. And they also became convinced of the greatness of the Lord's words, who says, Ananyas Chetayantumam Yena Mang Upasate. Those who worship me, I personally maintain them, and I carry to them what they lack. They became convinced. So my answer in conclusion is, when miseries come your way, when distraction comes, connect with the Lord, take shelter with the Lord. Misery, you could say, is something like boiling water. When something comes into boiling, when bread comes into boiling water, it breaks. When cotton comes into boiling water, it becomes hard. But when a nice peppermint leaf comes into boiling water, it spreads its fragrance and taste all around so that it becomes tea, beautiful tea. A devotee should react to misery not like a bread. He should not break. A devotee should not also become hard-hearted, critical against those immediate causes of the misery, people and so on. But in Krishna consciousness, he can accept, he can adjust his perspective, he can accept and he can aspire for Krishna. And in this way, be connected with Krishna, be like the nice peppermint leaf which spreads its fragrance and taste all around. This is what we learn from great devotees like His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj and from Sri Madhava Das. They did not complain. They did not become afraid. They did not become hard-hearted. No. They remained on the level of Krishna consciousness. I have been listening to the lectures of His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj, the ones which he gave before he went into the hospital. And I have seen a few lectures where he addressed questions like death. He said there is no problem for a devotee if death comes, because the death is sent by Krishna and there is no death. I have carefully studied now two lectures, maybe two, and some other small lectures, because I wish to learn from such a great devotees. When they speak, there's so much power to change the heart. Good. I'm done now. I can't believe I'm 2 minutes early. Most of the time I'm over time, but it must be your good Toronto influence on me that gives me the ability to be on time. So how should we proceed now? Hari Prasad, will you pose the questions for me, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for sharing your wisdom with us on how to live like the lotus in the swamp of all the material miseries. Deeply, deeply appreciate it. And thank all the viewers. Thank you to all the viewers who have been with us and are posing your comments and your questions. So the first question is, how do we distinguish when we should stand up for injustices like racism, for example, and when do we accept what is happening to us?
There are three principles for a devotee in this world. Namaruchi, he should develop the taste in Krishna, his holy name. Vaishnava Seva, serve the Vaishnavas. And then finally, Jiva Daya. Daya means compassion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, for a Vaishnava in this world, there is no higher dharma, you know, ethical codex, to live by than by the rule of compassion. So when there are injustices done, find first out if it is really an injustice. I want to say, because perceptions in this world are relative, but when it's something so outlandish as racism, I mean, that you don't need to ask, is this good or is it bad? You know immediately that this is ultra bad. Then do your best. Do your best. Every one of us has his circle of influence. A little sparrow is able to fly in the courtyard, and an eagle is can fly from continent to continent. So, but the best of the sparrow and the best of the eagle is the same. So do your best, and then leave the rest to Krishna after you have given your best. So that's how you can find out when something is in your influence, whatever your circle of influence is, and then you stand up and go for it all the way to your own limitations, and then when you see, oh, so much more needs to be done which I cannot do due to local restrictions or capabilities, then you pray to Krishna and put it into the hands of Krishna. My dear devotees, look at this. This is a clock from China. It's a birthday present from Gokrishna to me. I know how to read the clock, but I don't know how to adjust the clock, because it is some ultra-high technology behind it. So when I do everything with the clock which I know to do, like it can show me when I go like this, it's a timer to do it. When I go like this, it tells you the temperature. It can do everything except for flying, this clock. I use it as much as I can use, but when there is some time glitch, you know, it needs some, he needs to adjust, then I say, go Krishna, I'm highly untechnical by nature, you please adjust this clock so that it can run. In the same way, we do everything as good as we can, and then when we see, there's something I cannot do, we give it to Krishna or to higher authorities, and they will know how to fix the situation.
Thank you. We have a question from Keshavan. How can we overcome anxiety?
How can we overcome anxiety? I will give you first answer on the functional level of, and then on a, no, how to say it? I want to give you two types of answers. Keshava Prabhu, I do not know you. I would have to at least see your face to get some idea, and we are now on a public call. It's not, I would have to diagnose you a little, and that is not done in a public call. But the anxiety could have reasons which you may need to fix. Therefore, we always teach concepts like the tree of life, how a devotee can live a wholesome life where he does justice to his spiritual roots but also to his physical and emotional and social needs. Just like the tree has roots, it has a stem, and it has a crown, you as a human being have also a spiritual dimension. These are your roots. You have a physical and emotional dimension. That's what people can see. That's the stem. the trunk of your life, and you have a social dimension. You are a social being, and sometimes when there is a problem, like on the physical platform, like for instance, you may not be able to sleep very well, and therefore your mind is more prone towards anxiety than if you are well rested and healthy and so on. So I don't think we should always try to address problems which appear on the physical and mental level by only giving spiritual solutions, because they don't always grasp, they are not always compatible, these solutions. So there may be something which you may need to do on the physical and emotional and social level to overcome anxieties. And for this, I request you to turn to devotees who have your trust and who are a little knowing this. But in general, a spiritual solution, and that works always, is you need to look why you are in anxiety. What is the cause of the anxiety? Anxiety, according to the Bhagavatam, comes when we look away from Krishna, who is full of light, and we face the shadow, with its perplexing images and so on. Shadows can be quite threatening, you know. A small little child, when there is light behind him and the shadow is on a mountain, it can look like Vritasura, so dangerous, the child, no? Like a monster. So we always, anxieties always have the have this cause, that we see the material energy and what it throws at us, the various permutations of the material energy. And when we need to learn to turn around, don't look in the shadow, look at the light, and then your own shadows will also disappear. They will be chased away, your inner shadows and the things which are outside and which are causes of fear. This is what Parikshit Maharaj did. He lost his fear of death when he took shelter of the Lord by going down to the Ganga, which is a representative of the Lord. It comes from the Lord's lotus feet. So, two recipes for you, not just one. One, two. This is the first. If there is any material reason which needs to be dealt with, maybe you are not eating enough and not the right things and you are perplexed, that's the one. But the much more important, the red color, that's turn to Krishna, Keshava. Oh Keshava, turn to Krishna. Go to Krishna. Look, take shelter at Krishna. Surrender a little bit more. Come out of your half-dead state. So go fully to Krishna. Thank you, Keshava.
Thank you. Leela Mai asks, could you expand on how to accept miseries? Maybe we need to have more faith that Krishna is behind everything. What more can be said on how we can accept miseries?
There are always two things about everything. There's a story about it, and there is the reality about it. The stories which our mind makes are often not compatible with the reality. So you need to find out what is the reality. Very important. I would like to give you an example which is very fresh in my mind. There was a wonderful memorial for His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj in the Bhaktivedanta Mena, and devotees were asked to give their memories. Many devotees were asked, but I was not asked. Or so I thought. I looked through the whole memorial and I thought it was a beautiful memorial. I was very enlivened. But from time to time the question came, why was I not allowed to speak? This is my friend. Why was I not allowed? I felt this. Oh, maybe the devotees don't like me. They think I do not speak proper English. I only speak Germanized English. Maybe that's why they have not allowed me to speak. I felt very distressed. I thought, oh, I'm rejected by the devotees. Then 2 days later, I found an email, an urgent request. It was written on Monday morning where the memorial was, the day of the memorial. Maharaj, can you please speak? We need to hear you on Bhakti Charu Maharaj. But I had not gone into the computer. I'm not so intelligent with computer. I'm not intelligent for anything, but I'm particularly unintelligent for computers. And I had not gone. It was not that they rejected me. They wanted me. But I had not gone, to be quite precise with you. I was grieving so much that I had no nerve to go into the computer and find out so many other unrelated subjects. No, I was too much grieving. And my assistant was also too much grieving, and we were not able to go. So, one event. But my story about the event, which was not a real story, and then the reality of the event. Two different things. In the same way, when you wish to find out about a situation and come to terms with it, so that you can accept it, you must separate the story or narrative from the actual happening. And sometimes when one's emotions are cluttered with this event, like in my example, I was emotionally involved very much. You may need help from outside. Then you can accept it. With accept, it doesn't mean this is good, that you say this is good. No, it means this is the situation now with which we have to deal. And this clarity will help you very, very much in your life when you separate the facts from the story. And the mind is a great storyteller. You might all know this by now. Okay, I hope this helps you, Lila Mayi. I think it is you who I know, a Canadian devotee. Hare Krishna, Lila Mayi. Hari Hari Bo. Yes, Hari Prasad.
Thank you. Atma Darshini is asking, what is the best way to read and absorb the Srimad Bhagavatam? Sometimes I feel like I'm reading, but I don't remember much. Also, how can we try to practically apply it in our life?
Thank you very much for this very, very good question, because remember, the Bhagavatam is one way to help us to come to a spiritual level from where we can deal with disturbances and distractions and be a lotus in the swamp. There are three ways which the Bhagavatam itself says how it should be read. One is with faith. The other is regularly. And the third is with some effort. Shraddha, some faith should be put in there. Nitya means continuously, regularly. And Svacheshtitam, with some personal effort. Now, let me talk about the last point. What personal effort should we put into the reading of the Bhagavatam to get an excellent result and to retain its contents? There are three things you must know. First is you should read just absorb or read the content. Now, after you have read, let us say, a verse and a purport, you should not jump to the next. No. Now you will bring it deeper into you by reflecting about it. You make a pause and you say, what did I just read? Okay, we read about Parikshit Maharaj, who came to the banks of the Ganga. He accepted that this is his end. You know, he adjusted his perspective. He thought this is arranged by Krishna. Then what was the next thing? Yes, he accepted the situation. And then he aspired. He gave it a new frame. He aspired, I'm wanting to have attachment to you, Krishna. Now where my material attachments are taken away by you. Acha. So you reflect about it. One way to reflect is this, to make notes. When you write something down with your hand, not with the computer, with your hands, you will transport things from the short-term memory into the long-term memory. Right, making notes and reading notes, not just making notes and then done. Okay, I'm finished. You must read them again. So that is reflecting. Making notes can help you to reflect. Talking with other people can help you to reflect about what you do. Sitting just and remembering what you read, let it run through your mind, can help you to reflect. Thinking how does this relate to your life can help you to reflect. And then you're ready for the third action which you should do in relationship to the Bhagavatam. The first was just hearing. The second was reflecting about it. And the third is you should apply it. These three processes relate and can be best explained by giving you the example of eating. Shravanam, or just hearing or reading, is like bringing the food to the mouth. Reflecting about the content is like chewing the food. In Sanskrit, it's called mananaha. Now the food will become prepared and readied for absorption. And applying is like swallowing the food so that it goes down and becomes digested. And then you have internalized the subject matter. I hope this will help you Please, if you have not made notes by now, do it just now, because you might forget when the next question or the next answer comes. So what do we do to absorb the Bhagavatam? We have to not just bring it nearby, that means hear it, we have to reflect about it and then apply it in daily life. Then it will stay with you, it will nourish you, it will give you strength, it will bring you and keep you on the spiritual platform, where you can be like a lotus in the swamp.
Thank you. We'll need to come to a close in just a few minutes, but we'll have one last question. How do we let go of painful experiences of the past when we are reminded of them and we are trying not to be affected by them?
You can only completely let go of something that you have come to something like a closure with. Therefore, for instance, when you lose a very near and dear one, you must come to closure with this. You must complete it. Therefore, in the Vedic times, periods of grieving are recommended. In that time, you totally engage with that near and dear one. You see photos, you read, if they have written you letters, you read the letters, sit on a bench alone by yourself and you think about what the departure of it. You go really into it and you allow the normal human reaction, that is grief, come out. And in this way you digest the thing and you come to some sort of closure. And then you can go on with your life. And even if the subject of that person or the miserable situation should come up again, as it most properly will, you have dealt with it before. And because you have dealt with it before, you have tried to come to closure with it, it will not affect you so much. Therefore, if there are any disciples of His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj watching this, or any friends or those who are close, let me recommend to you a period. I have heard of 7 days. I myself have my time this week. I was doing my regular service, but I read his books. I remembered as many memories. I talked with other close friends of him. I talked with the devotees in our ashram. I sat many times on a bench and cried, because then after this I will always be reminded of Bhakti Charu Maharaj. I will not forget my friend at all, but I will be not in such a devastated situation. Now I'm already all right, but few days I would not have been able to do this conference call with all of you. But closure, no? Then maybe you have divorced from someone and it was a very unfortunate divorce, it was very unclear what was really the problem, and it will come back again and again. Maybe someone has said something about you which they have not carefully authenticized. They have just spoken something which was not related to the fact, and you will meet or will be reminded of the person or the situation. Better is to come to closure in whatever ways is possible. And then you have dealt with it, then it is neatly packaged. It never is neatly packaged when it's a great hurt, but it is as well packaged as possible in a little package you can deal with, and it's no longer that overwhelming wave of grief or disturbance which can disturb you. So, Hari Bol, I heard we are coming now to a closure, to a completion. Is this correct, our host? Have I seen it properly?
Yes. Thank you so much, Maharaj. We deeply, deeply appreciate your time. It's been so moving and so special to hear from you. Thank you for all that you've shared. So, we'll just close with a few announcements before we get into the next event.
Can I make one closing small sentence?
Yes, please.
I thank you all very, very much. I may not know many of you, but I could feel your presence on this call. Those of you who could make time to come here, it was a genuine privilege. You are listening the first time to me live, and I have a little direct expression because I do not know English, very sophisticated English, so something I say is a little bit like an atom bomb, not like this, like a spear, my intention is very well. So I thank you all very, very much, and I wish you a wonderful ongoing program, and I will now mute myself. Hare Krishna.